A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and Eurosport. Catherine Whittaker and myself come to you on Monday at the Australian Open, midway through the Rafael Nadal against Gael Monfils match, which is currently going on with Nadal 6-3 up. And we've got a new spot to record from today, haven't we, Catherine? Because we're in the radio room, inside the press room. So we're keeping our voices down just a little bit, not to upset our colleagues. But we can kind of do what we like because everybody shouts and gets excited when a big point happens in this particular room, don't they?
Yes, it's probably where we belong, isn't it, the radio room? It's a very interesting atmosphere in here, sort of, painful silence and then eruptions of energy and excitement. It's an interesting place.
It sure is. And at the moment, Nadal playing pretty decently. Gael Monfils, I've come up with a pretty unkind kind of comparison here to the football team Tottenham Hotspurs in the UK. You remember when Alex Ferguson many years ago said that, or apparently one of his team talks was, "Lads, it's Spurs." And that was basically his team talk. Go out and do what you do. And I get the sense that you could have said to Nadal before this match, "Rafa, it's Gael. You know, you don't know what you're going to get from 1 minute to the next. Do what you do and you'll be just fine."
I mean, what are we getting from 1 minute to the next from Gael Monfils? I so wanted him to mount a challenge in this, to make it the
most that
on paper it could be. And he might. And I've just seen him sort of limping a little bit there. I don't think it's anything particularly major. But I don't know whether he overthinks it. Why doesn't he just come out and hit the ball in the way that we know he can? Why is he employing all these sort of... Why does he feel he can't just be Gael Monfils in these big matches? That's what I don't understand, because Gael Monfils is a blooming good tennis player that, OK, he's perhaps not a 14-time Grand Slam champion, but he's a player that, on his day, will win some of these matches. But Gael Monfils trying to be someone other than Gael Monfils doesn't work.
He might be injured, of course. He's 6-3, 3-1 down as we come to you now. Maybe you'll have mounted the fight back by the time you hear this, but it doesn't look like it from where we're standing. Now, when we came to you late last night, we were just at the end of the Roger Federer victory over Kei Nishikori. Since then, in the hours that followed, Angelique Kerber has gone out at the hands of Coco Vandeweghe. It did have a feeling of inevitability about it, Catherine.
Such a weird atmosphere during that match on the Rod Laver Arena. My colleague and I were actually handed a pair of tickets. We were out watching on the big screen, which is where we recorded the podcast yesterday, towards the end of the Federer match. And some people, as they were leaving, just handed us their tickets. And we thought, yeah, let's go and sit in the crowd and be a fan for a bit. And it was very enjoyable, but a very strange atmosphere. It wasn't the atmosphere of a world number one going out. You compare it to Andy Murray earlier. I mean, it wasn't that they didn't know and appreciate the significance of what was happening. It was just, it felt like put this woman out of her misery. I suspect that the predominant feeling for Kerber was relief, and she knew it was inevitable at some point in the tournament. I mean, she's been there for the beating. Had she not had such a good draw, it would have happened sooner. I think it just took somebody to play really, really well, and Vandeweghe was the one that seized the opportunity, and she did play really, really well. But I have to say, for a world number one, she didn't take a whole lot of beating, and I think, yeah, there might be more than a dash of sweet relief for Angelique Kerber to be put out of the misery that she seemed to be feeling for much of this tournament.
Well, back in 1991, the year after that Pete Sampras had won the US Open title for the first time, aged 19, he described losing at the US Open the following year to Jim Courier in the quarterfinals. He described that as like a monkey off my back. You know, he'd been carrying around a weight and finally it was relieved. So I suspect there might have been something similar there.
A friend of mine who's leaving Melbourne this evening to head back to London has just said that she's waiting in the departure lounge for her Emirates flight home, and one Mr. Dan Evans has just had a call put out for him.
Oh dear, Dan, go and get your flight. You've got to hurry up.
You can't let go of the Australian Open 2017.
So typical. Anyway, so since then, obviously, Angelique Kerber has gone out. Things have continued to happen in the women's draw, pretty much though as we expected them to. Earlier on today, Johanna Konta, emphatic, really. Okay, she went 4-1 down in the second set against Ekaterina Makarova, but even then, that was Makarova's good play. It was comfortable, really, for Konta, and very, very hard fought, I thought. Two sets, but hard fought for Serena Williams. She needed 8 set points in the first set against Barbara Strizova, who was excellent today, played as well as she could, and certainly in terms of form so far, I think Konta has looked the better. We will preview that match properly tomorrow, but again, just a quick comment on Konta.
In terms of pure tennis, Jo Konta's played the best of anybody this tournament. I think that's... I haven't heard that disputed anywhere, really. She looks the part of a champion. The fact is, you know, as Martina Navratilova said earlier, it cannot be an open draw when Serena Williams is in a draw. You know, everybody's talking about this open draw. Well, the arguable greatest of all time is in it. So that's just a shame for Konta that she's got that quarterfinal matchup. Serena has to be the favourite just because she's Serena. Tennis, the quality of tennis so often goes out the window when it's Serena Williams on a court. But she's got more than a chance, does Jo Konta, more than a chance.
Yeah, she was very, very excited, I think, at the prospect of getting to play Serena because, you know, who knows how many more chances a player will get to play Serena. She's never played it before. And as I said, we'll preview that properly tomorrow. We'll hear from Martina Navratilova. Both Catherine and I did interviews with her today. You for Eurosport, myself for BBC Radio 5 Live. So we'll decide which one was the better and then we'll use that one. Or maybe we'll combine them. We'll see. That'll be tomorrow. Catherine's also been speaking to Michael Chang and to Goran Ivanisevic about Roger Federer. We'll play those for you a little bit later in the show. Karolina Pliskova has gone through, knocking out Daria Gavrilova and looking, frankly, very comfortable.
She was awesome. It's funny that Daria Gavrilova doesn't get any less perky. That ponytail doesn't get any less bouncy, no matter how badly she's being thumped by the opponent on the other end of the court. She's still bouncing around, ponytail bobbing, but there was never a moment when Gavrilova had a chance in that match. Pliskova, yeah, she blitzes through matches like that now, doesn't she? That's you know, that's bread and butter for her.
Yeah, it is rather. Now, one of the stories of the tournament, one of the stories certainly of the day, was the victory today for Mirjana Lucic-Baroni over Jennifer Brady. And, you know, this is a woman who 19 years ago played this tournament as a 15-year-old and was a contemporary of Venus and Serena Williams and of Martina Hingis. She was in that group and she was prodigious in talent. She had terrible personal problems, really not looked after by her, certainly by her dad, from all the reports that we read. She had terrible financial difficulties. She was playing for years just sort of without any sort of ability to earn money at all, really, and get out on the tour. So she missed basically a decade of her career and then came back. And here she is, 34 years of age, in the quarterfinals and the singles. I mean, it's quite upsetting to hear her talk about all that she went through, but at the same time, it is utterly uplifting to see her now and and how she's managed to overcome all those problems.
Yeah, she's one of the worst and most tragic examples of something that's all too common and that we don't sort of hear about enough, really, in terms of, I mean, pushy parenting is one end of the spectrum, and what she experienced was an entirely more extreme end of the spectrum. But the fact, as you say, that she's come out the other side and is where she is, albeit with a kind draw in Jennifer Brady for a place in the quarterfinals, is incredible. I do wonder how much guidance and wisdom she provides in the locker room to all those other players that are, you know, without naming any names, we know how prevalent, you know, overbearing parenting is in tennis, probably in plenty of other sports as well, but we can only really speak about tennis, particularly I think in women's tennis. So I do wonder if she's able to be some sort of really positive guiding light inspiration, I suppose, to those people, because yeah, she is an inspiration.
She really is an inspiration, and she goes through to the next round, and it'll be fascinating to see whether she can continue this extraordinary journey. She's got Karolina Pliskova next.
Maybach, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
So, Catherine, that's the women's side of the draw. We've talked about Nadal, who's now 6-3, 4-3, and in fact he's got a point for 5-3. Some vintage Nadal play, frankly, some up-and-down play from Monfils. He did get one break back, but he's blown it again. Anyway, the winner of this one will face Miloš Raonic, who has had a pretty heavy cold, from what I understand, this week. And I thought he was in real trouble today against Roberto Bautista Agut. He was 5-1 down in the first set tiebreak. He managed to win it. He lost the second set pretty heavily, losing his serve on two occasions. And then in the third set, he was break point down three times in a game, which would have enabled Roberto Bautista Agut to serve for the third set. First of all, I think we've got to say, great nerve showed by Raonic in those situations, not only to serve himself out of trouble, but when he then set himself up with a chance, he pulled the trigger on the forehand and he got through it. I mean, he got through it comfortably in the end in the fourth set. But, you know, he doesn't look completely happy at the moment to me, which, you know, he's the highest player left in the draw ranking-wise. So great opportunity for him, but I'm not that convinced by him yet.
Great opportunity, probably possibly too big an opportunity for him, being the highest seed left in draw, I suppose. Yeah, I mean, we talk about draws opening up, but it's sort of gone past that now at this Australian Open, isn't it? Everyone's just accepted that it's not a question of one or two seeds going out and draws opening up in pockets. It's just an unpredictable, anything can happen tournament. So I think he might struggle if and when, probably when, he faces Nadal in the next round. I think Nadal is the favourite going into that one on the basis of what I've seen so far.
Yeah, they played each other a couple of weeks ago in Brisbane, and Nadal was the better player for the first set and a half. Then he had a rough spell in the match, Raonic took control. So we'll see. I mean, we still don't know what's going to happen as and when Nadal's pressured and starts to feel it, whether that forehand's going to go. We saw it a bit in the Zverev match, and, you know, there are players in this draw that may bring those demons back.
The other thing is he's flown so under the radar, Milos Raonic, considering he was a semi-finalist here last year and but for a hip injury could have been more. The fact that he's came in here as the third seed, is now the top seed left in. You know, he's out on high sends today for his fourth round match. He's not really been talked about a whole lot, and suddenly, with what's happened to others in the draw, he's going to find himself massively in the spotlight for the next match. Hugely hyped, hugely talked about, and it's going to be interesting to see how that's dealt with, because Nadal's got no issue dealing with that sort of thing, has he? He's been doing it for years.
No, that's right. While we've been talking, we've got obviously the Nadal-Monfils match on the screen in front of us. We've also got another screen showing the press conference room. And we can't hear what he's saying, but Grigor Dimitrov has been in there. He won in four sets today against Denis Istomin, lost the first set 6-2, which he did a couple of days ago. I can't remember who against. He lost a heavy first set. It was against Chung of Korea. It was a great first set he played. But there was no panic from Dimitrov, and then he asserted his own game and won it, albeit Istomin was clearly injured at the end of the second set. So Dimitrov's in form, but what was clear was he's happy again. He's happy playing tennis. He looked... It was great to see him smile in the interview room. We didn't hear what he was saying because there was no sound coming out of the speakers, but, you know, his body language is good.
Yeah, you looked like a proud dad looking up at the press conference.
Not so proud of my other son, Dan Evans, at the moment, as he wanders around Melbourne Airport, lost, no doubt.
Update on that front is that a last call has now gone out for Mr. Daniel Evans for the Emirates flight to Dubai in about 20 minutes' time.
Will he make it?
Can you imagine the scenes happening at Melbourne Airport right now? Can you imagine? What class do you think he's travelling in?
I should have thought he'd be right at the front now. What with his big check? I mean, you know, he's going to get halfway. I mean, he's the sort of character. He's probably an economy. Probably the senior man thought, oh, he's the lad who couldn't afford any T-shirts. Let's stick him in business, shall we?
In his, where were they from? Kmart T-shirts, yeah. So that's what Dan Evans is up to. Who are we talking about?
We're talking about Dimitrov, looking pretty good at the moment. He's going to play golf next.
He's happy. You know, we've talked about he needs a cuddle and a hug and a smile and a warm guiding hand, and that's what Danny Valverde is providing. He's obviously just happier with life. Rumours, incidentally, that he and Scherzi are no more, so that could be a factor as well. Those came from Jim Courier on Channel 7 commentary last night. I'm not just being a complete rumour monger. I consider that to be a relative,
you're spreading his rumour.
Relatively solid source. He said it with authority.
How would he know?
I don't know.
Anyway,
he moves in the right circles, I suppose. So he just looks relaxed and like he feels he's where he's meant to be and not an imposter. But it is going to get interesting, because talk about an opportunity for him. He should have his eyes on, dare I say, the final.
Oh, goodness me. Hold on a minute. He'd have to beat either Nadal or Raonic if he got past Goffin. And Goffin's playing well.
Should have his eyes on the final.
Well, he's got to have his eyes on the next point. That's what they always say.
Yeah. In the wider context, David.
Okay. Right. I see.
Don't you think he should now... His ambition, if he were to think about it, which I can understand why he wouldn't, because process and all that, he should be aiming for the final.
I really do. I think he's playing... I don't know whether he's playing the best tennis of his career, because he was really good when he won Queens, wasn't he, 2.5 years ago, and he reached the Wimbledon semis. He's playing that level, at least. You know, maybe better. Maybe he's a better player now. I think he's got a good sense of balance now, because I think back then he thought he'd cracked it, and then he lost that Wimbledon semi to Djokovic, and I think that really set him back, and I think he was the same again after that, to be quite honest. Now, Goffin is the man he'll face. I haven't looked up the whole head-to-head, but I remember them playing a match at the US Open. I think it was that year, actually, 2014, and Goffin caused him real problems for a set and a half. You know, he the way he's able to take the ball so early, and he sees the ball so clearly.
I'm not sure there's anyone that David Goffin can't cause problems for. That doesn't mean he can beat anyone on any day, but he can cause problems for anyone. today's match against Dominic Thiem went exactly the way that I thought it would, and that is sad for me and for you.
Why?
I think because you just knew as soon as he lost that second set.
Thiem,
you just knew. You know it, I know it. You've asked him, haven't you?
I went in there. I went in the press conference. I was the only English-speaking journalist in the press conference. They'd moved it into small interview room two. Otherwise, they would have recorded the feed in the main interview room. We could have actually played the conversation he and I had. However, it was in the little room, and I don't think we get access to that. So I'll tell you the gist of what went on. I asked him about the match, and I asked him how he was feeling physically. He said, I felt all right. You know, it was a close match, but I felt okay. I questioned that. I must admit, I questioned whether he did feel okay, really. And I asked him, do you feel that given the amount that you play, that you might need to start changing things a little bit? You know, you were injured at the US Open. You know, you've lost this one here. Is it time to change the way you do things? He said, well, I've already changed the way I do things because I don't play doubles anymore. So that was one thing he said. But it was quite interesting when pushed on it, he did say, I feel that if I'm able to play a lot, that it benefits me. He does seem to feel that he's hardening his constitution so that he can handle it. Now, maybe...
He might feel like that. Doesn't mean he's right.
But what there is a possibility that down the track, Catherine, he may end up getting the dividends from this investment. There is that chance.
Maybe, but that's been quite complacent, assuming that these chances.
That was a highlight of the show yesterday. You doing a Brummie accent. I mean, come on.
Can't help myself now. That those chances all keep coming. You know, you can't take that for granted. Fourth rounds of Grand Slams are a huge deal for him. Yeah, I know he's been to a semi-final at the French Open, and I believe he quoted that to you as evidence of playing a lot, playing dividends.
Yeah, he said, I won the tournament the week before. Was it Nice? I won the tournament the week before the French Open, and then I had my best ever Grand Slam, reaching the semi-finals. He also said, I've had my best ever Australian Open here. So he was trying to give that evidence. My response to that...
He could do better.
My response to him would be, no other player does that.
No other top player.
No other top player is what I mean, yeah.
And it's not a coincidence. He's not the exception. He's good, but he's not that good that he's so much physically superior to Federer and Nadal and Murray that he can do something that they can't physically.
I did feel a bit mean, though. He's so nice.
And, oh, he's great, and he's a joy to watch. He's lovely, and there's something so earnest about him, the way he answers questions. He's just very, very earnest. There's a bit of sort of similarities with Kyle Edmund, I think, in that way. He takes everything sort of very much at face value. But yeah, he's just frustrating, isn't he?
You would have you spent a bit of time with both of those two at the tiebreak tens events that they both won, I like the fact that he doesn't dodge the question.
No.
He looked me in the eye, and he was happy. He didn't get annoyed that I'm asking about it. He just took it, and he answered it, and he said what he thought. So
he's a very, very straightforward individual. I'm going to make, seeing as you've fulfilled your end of the bargain with tackling old Dominic on our perceived bad decision making with regard to his schedule, maybe I've been meaning to perhaps ask Boris Becker in the Eurosport green room at Stumpstage, who of course worked with Gunter Bresnik latterly in his career, what he thinks Gunter's playing at, because that's where ultimately the fault lies, if there is fault, because he's just a 23-year-old that's never done this before. He might feel like he just wants to play tennis, and it's up to the more experienced guiding hand to say, hang on a second, Dominic, hold your horses.
So that's today. That's what went on today. Catherine Whittaker here, and Gael Monfils currently 2-0 down now against Rafael Nadal. And I don't know whether the comeback's going to come. Tomorrow, Catherine, we have the returning Roger Federer. He gets another night match. That's 4 night matches in 5 outings on the Rod Laver Arena. I understand why. Thomas Berdych against Federer, Nishikori against Federer. They're night matches, right? He is the draw card of all draw cards. But is that fair?
You're assuming that night match is the preference.
It's his preference. It's got to be.
Is it every player's preference?
I don't know. But I mean, why should he always be getting the conditions that he likes for his match? And because he's brilliant in night matches, absolutely brilliant. The final is going to be a night match. The semi-final is going to be a night match. So he could well come up against players that have absolutely no experience of playing those situations at all.
I'm not saying there's not an element of unfairness. However, we all know that it is court choices are not a democracy. So it's completely undemocratic decision making, and there's lots of factors that go into it. Television, players do have a say. The greater the ranking of the player.
But the ATP do have certain rules about that. I mean, they don't have jurisdiction here, of course, but there is an impact. I've seen it myself. You know, they will try to consider rest and all that sort of thing. I mean, you know, Pete Sampras, when he won his final Grand Slam tournament at the US Open, he played every single match, night session, Arthur Ashe Stadium.
And it, so there are parallels.
Oh, goodness me, there are. Absolutely there are. And it really helped him. I mean, you know, ultimately, I still come down on the side of the argument of how can you decry him that? How can you sort of say he shouldn't have that? Because it's hard, you know, we all love the bloke, and it's a great story and all that sort of thing, but, you know, if I was not such a cosy other tennis player, because everybody's so cosy, aren't they? They all love Roger themselves. I mean, you know, every player in this draw, if they get beaten by Roger, they hope he goes and wins the title, don't they? Most of them. But, you know, if I wasn't like that, if I was Jimmy Connors or John McEnroe, I'd be in, or Ivan Lendl, I'd be in that order of play scheduling room having it out.
Well, do you think Magnus Norman is in the order of play scheduling room?
No, because he's so nice, isn't he? Everybody loves Magnus and everybody loves Stan, and they'll all be really nice about it.
I mean, it's Stan and Songa are the ones that could have got the night session.
Songa's lovely, isn't he? I mean, you know, come on, lads.
Yeah, everyone's nice. So all other things being equal, give it to Federer.
All right, fine. Anyway, we wanted to know how Federer's looking from the perspective of the two coaches that have been coaching players that have played him this week. Very well-known ones, Goran Ivanišević and Michael Chang. Catherine's been speaking to them for Eurosport, and Catherine asked Goran, first of all, whether it was a surprise that Federer, 6 months out from the game, is playing this sort of tennis.
No, I'm never surprised when Roger is, when you mention his name. He's here because he's ready. He's here because he knows that he still has something to win a Grand Slam. He knows that he's here because he can compete with these guys. This course suits him well, and he's going to be around, I think, for another year or two, because he can still compete in the highest level and he can still beat on certain night and everybody in the tennis. So and it's enjoyable to watch him.
Just finally, his next opponent, Misha Zverev. I'm guessing, as a serve volleyer yourself, you're a bit of a fan of his.
Yes, and what Misha produced yesterday, it's great. You know, it's great for tennis. It's a huge surprise. But the way he was playing, the way he was, moving around the net, it's great. I don't think he can make two matches in a row, but it's going to be a different match against Roger. But still, it's this Australian Open happens for the reason. Happens for the tennis. This is to give other guys some chance, try to win a Grand Slam. That's why I think the winner of this Grand Slam is going to be a guy who never won a Grand Slam before.
Name of that guy?
I don't know the name, but there are five of them: Raonic, Dimitrov, Tsonga, Timo, Goffin, or Monfils. We see one of these.
Come on, one name, Goran. One name.
One name. I give you two names: Raonic or Dimitrov.
We'll take that, Goran. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So that was one super coach, Goran Ivanišević. Here's another super coach, Michael Chang.
Michael, I spoke to Goran a few minutes ago, and you and he have had the misfortune this tournament of coaching against a certain Mr. Roger Federer. Talk to me about the tennis that you saw him play against Kay last night.
Yeah, I mean, Kay started great. You know, he's up 4-love, 5-1, and, you know, unfortunately just didn't keep it going. And Roger's you know, such a great champion. You know, he finds a way to get back into the match. You know, from there, his rhythm started going for shots. Everything started to fall in for him, and all of a sudden, it's a different ball game from there. So, you know, even though he hasn't played a whole lot over these past 6 months, he knows how to win. You know, there's no question about that. He'll never forget that. And you know, it's obviously great to be able to have him back out on tour. It's nice to be able to see him out here playing well and getting as excited as he is for winning a match like that. It's unfortunate for Kay. It's a costly lesson for him to learn last night. But I hope it's a lesson that you know, he'll learn and he'll take with him, you know, going forward from here.
On the evidence of last night, do you think Federer could win this tournament?
I mean, I think it's always a possibility. You've got a lot of great players left. Obviously, you know, without Novak and Andy in the draw, the draw opens up for everybody. I don't think he's looking too far ahead. You can't at this point. You know, Stan's still in there. You know, Rafa's always tough. Milos is serving well. Grigor's been playing well. You know, winning in Brisbane. Then you've got Tsonga, you've got Monfils, I mean, you've got Thiem, Goffin. I mean, they're all great players. So, you know, everyone's hungry to capitalize on this opportunity that they know they don't have to play Novak and Murray, two guys that have done so well over the past, you know, year and a half. So, you know, everyone's going to be fired up, and it'll be interesting and fun to see how the second week unfolds.
Just to pick up on a couple of names that you mentioned there, obviously there's a real mixture of sort of the stalwarts that have won Grand Slam titles before and these new names. Is somebody like Stan Wawrinka, does he now emerge as a favorite for the title here?
I don't even know if there's a clear-cut favorite anymore. I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, you come into, you know, the Australian Open, you know, who are the favorites? It's Murray. It's Djokovic, you know. I think you kind of leave it at that, you know, because those guys have been so dominant. You know, from here on out, I mean, you know, all those guys have beaten all, they've beaten each other. So, you know, it kind of really depends on how these next matches go. You know, I think Roger's going to be, you know, excited about playing, you know, Zverev instead of Murray, and then having 2 days off coming into the semifinal is going to be crucial, I think, for him from a physical standpoint. So, you know, a lot of factors to include and certainly to think about.
Yeah, well, certainly an exciting tournament. Michael, great to get your thoughts.
Thanks.
Well, first of all, Catherine, we cut out the answer from Goran when he was clearly irritated by the fact that you'd reminded him how he said he wasn't playing that well for the first couple of rounds. Then he went and duffed up his own player in the third round.
Yeah, he tried to cover up, didn't he? He tried to say, no, I said that, you know, he's Roger Federer and he could produce magic. I didn't remind him of his exact line, which was, I'm not impressed by Roger. that could be one of those things that gets quoted back to him by me forevermore if Federer goes on to win the title here. But yeah, I mean, talk about coziness. I mean, he went on to say, oh, but it's fantastic. I really want him to go on and win. And yes, it was painful, but it was great to see Roger playing that brilliantly. And I'm glad he backed it up against Nishikori. I think he was very, very surprised. Looking at how he reacted in that player box, I think Michael Chang was surprised. I think Michael Chang thought that when it went to five, Roger Federer wouldn't have it in him to do it in five. I think he's surprising everybody, even people like Goran and Michael.
I think he's even surprising himself a little bit, you know. A little bit. Deep down, he's secretly thinking, I'm the best of all time. There's a bit of that in there. I mean, you know, he can get away with thinking that because he kind of probably is. But I mean, you know, in the front of his sort of mind, of his logical mind, this can't keep going. I think he's probably thinking, really?
Is he?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think that's certainly what he's saying. He's saying, I don't think I can string this together. I don't agree with him.
Is he saying that?
Yeah.
He said, I don't think I can win the tournament.
No, he did say, after he had that amazing performance against Burdick, I don't think that I can do this day after day at the moment, is pretty much what he said. So there we are. Well, who's he up against tomorrow? I can't even remember that. Oh, Misha Zverev.
Misha Zverev, yeah. I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, I think he'll probably be fine.
Exactly those words prior to Andy Murray's match with Misha Zverev. Though.
Yeah, we did say that. Yeah, and if Federer wins that one, who's he got then?
Well, Wawrinka or Tsonga.
Oh yeah. See, I think Federer's in the final. I mean, talking to most people, a couple of people said, look, Stan Wawrinka is the guy who's won recent Grand Slam titles. He's playing really well, which he is. He's the bookies' favourite now, actually, for the title.
5-2. 5-2 he is. I think that's far too short, personally. But I find that very interesting.
He is the US Open champion.
Sorry, no. After last night, Federer. I thought you were talking about Federer.
No, I'm talking about Wawrinka.
Federer became the favourite. 5-2.
No. Wawrinka's the favourite for the title.
Well, I checked it last night. Wawrinka was prior to the Nishikori match, and I checked it last night.
I can't check it because the bookies are blocked for all the media here. We're not allowed to bet, which is good.
Well, they're not. Well, I must.
We're not
even
allowed to check.
It was my brother that checked because he just needs to know all Federer-related facts.
No, somebody checked today, and Wawrinka's the favourite. I promise you, because we looked about 4 hours ago, something like. You can't check, Catherine, because we're in the media.
I've got a photo on my phone, David.
Have you really? Anyway. I would say that if Federer comes up against Wawrinka, that he beats Wawrinka, because I think it's a really tough match for Stan in many ways, and I think he'd take his time away and beat him. So anyway, that's what I think. Well, Catherine's produced some odds that I don't believe, but anyway.
I don't agree with them, but there's the evidence.
Okay, fine. Well, I'm not going to plug that bookmaker. What do you think? Do you think he's going to go to the final?
Yeah, I do.
So do I. Anyway.
So, okay, if you're predicting that confidently he's going to get to the final, surely he'd be the favourite in the final. That means, doesn't that sort of mean you're predicting Roger Federer is going to win this?
How would he be the favourite against Rafael Nadal, who's got a massively winning record?
You think we're looking at a Federer-Nadal final here?
How do I know?
Well, you volunteered that prediction, David. I'm just following it through to its logical
Which one?
Conclusion.
I did say Nadal would reach the final the other day, didn't I?
So you think Nadal is beating Federer in the final here?
Probably, yeah.
Well,
I do think Dimitrov's got a chance of beating Nadal, though.
I do too. I think it might be a Federer-Dimitrov final.
Imagine that. Fed versus baby Fed. Anyway, that's for a few days' time. I think we'll wrap it up there. Safe to say, Catherine, back by popular demand, pole vault. I asked which was the bigger shock.
Back by Zverev, popular demand.
Zverev over Murray or Istomin over Djokovic? What do you think? Stop looking at the screen. What do you think?
Istomin over Djokovic. Because that set the tone, didn't it? By Murray Zverev, yes, it was, as a self-contained match on paper, the bigger shock, but it suddenly was starting to look at the tournament as one where shocks and strange things were happening by that point. So the Djokovic shock exit set the tone for a strange, weird and wonderful tournament.
I would agree. I would call the Djokovic shock the bigger one because it was so unlikely that I didn't even know he was playing tennis Istomin, to be quite honest. I genuinely didn't, until Istomin walked out to the court. I was like, oh, I haven't seen him for ages. I haven't seen him for ages because he was faffing around on the futures circuit or something. Anyway, listen, this is how popular pole vault is, right? There's 3 hours to go left in this vote. Stop looking at me like that. 1,173 people have taken part in this pole vault. 48% say that Zverev over Murray's the biggest shock. 52% say Istomin over Djokovic. Why are you not looking interested?
Twitter bots, David. I'm sure it's mostly Twitter bots.
Okay, well, it isn't. It's real people, and they're really engaged, and they're really excited, because pole vault is back. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, that has been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and Eurosport, who have exclusive TV rights over the course of the Australian Open and the French Open and the US Open as well. Don't forget that offer, £19.99 in the UK for the Eurosport player that gets you access for a year to all of those. BBC Radio 5 Live Sports Extra will be bringing you coverage as well tomorrow, every day of the tournament. There's so much to enjoy. You can read Simon Briggs's articles, of course, in The Telegraph. And Catherine, we will be back for another podcast tomorrow, won't we? As long as you don't annoy me.
Likewise, David. What a nice way to sign off.
Indeed. What's we to say? I wonder about. Hold on a minute. How's Dan Evans getting on? Has he got that fight yet?
No further update. No further update.
Fingers crossed forever.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.